From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Well, we're glad you tuned in. Later in the hour, we hope to catch up with Lorraine and Celestino Lamar, missionaries from the Philippines. And we'll get an update there. They actually will be, God willing, they'll be at Calvary Church tonight in the Bible Island portion of the campus. It's actually room M7 from 5 until 6 o'clock prior to the Wednesday night service tonight, where you can get updates and see what the Lord's doing in the Philippines through the ministry of Lorraine and Celestino Lamar and their kids. Wait until you hear what the whole family is up to. We hope to have them on later in the show. But we're going to start our show today with Ray Mondragon. Ray, freshly back from a whole nother country.
Across the border.
Across the border into Texas, the Houston area. And you were down there for a Schaefer Seminary
conference. Right.
How'd that go?
Went well. Went well.
Highlights?
Good speakers. Some of them probably your audience may remember or know about.
Yeah. Anyone you want to mention?
Randy Price.
Okay.
Archaeologist and Bible teacher, et cetera. Doug Petrovich may not be as familiar, but he's an Egyptologist and archaeologist himself. And he was very good.
Excellent. So lots of science and lots of updates.
Mainly biblical text.
Okay.
Textual criticism was a major theme and a little archaeology here and there.
Yep. You never stop learning, do you, Ray?
Oh, no.
Well, we appreciate the effort and the time you take to prepare for coming on ABQ Connect and sharing with us. Where are we headed today?
Well, today we will continue our look at the Genesis flood. And we've been talking about the fact that the secular world, and particularly secular geology, does not believe that there's any evidence in the geological column for a worldwide flood.
And they work really hard to do that, don't they?
Well, it's a matter of interpreting the data.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, is how do you interpret the geological column? And there's a far better way than the secular geologist does it. And if you look at it from, I think, a biblical worldview perspective and
right.
And knowing that the Bible is authoritative and describes a worldwide flood, then the evidence is actually overwhelming. And I'd like to get into a little of that today.
Right. Okay. So where are we starting today as far as our discussion?
Well, if you'd like to do a little quick review.
Let's look back. It's been a day or two since you were in.
Well, a little over a month.
Yeah. which we like to have Ray in about once a month, which, by the way, Ray is with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Is it Tuesday nights, you guys?
Tuesday nights, and we'll meet this coming Tuesday night, the next Tuesday night, third Tuesday of the month at Faith Bible Church, 7 o'clock.
Faith Bible Church, 7 o'clock, down on Central. What's that, near
Central
Eubank?
And Moon.
Okay, I was close. Yeah. Central and
right
Moon.
Right on the corner.
Yeah, and you don't need to sign up.
No.
Just show up.
Just show up.
Park the car.
Bring young people, primarily. We like to give them the biblical perspective, the biblical worldview in terms of science.
All right, well, let's do some of that right now. Look at some of what we covered last time.
Well, this is actually our third session on the Genesis flood. The first one, I tried to lay out the various different over many of them. But let me mention that the most popular view within the church, and I'm talking broadly, and I'm talking about some conservative churches, some that have a high view of the Bible, they believe because they're intimidated by the scientific community and the geological viewpoint, they assume that maybe the Bible meant that there's a local flood.
Yeah,
rather than a universal worldwide flood.
Maybe instead of fearing them, They should fear the Lord.
And, that's absolutely
and,
true.
And a reverential awe is what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Not to have that towards the secular views. It's disappointing, actually. You surprised me in the last couple times.
Well, it's understandable, but yeah. There's a better explanation that not only fits the scientific data, but also supports what Scripture tells us even before there was a idea of geology.
Right. Okay. And anything else in way of review?
Well, we talked the last time, we focused on the fact that the Bible very, very clearly, you have to jump through hoops to get to any other conclusion other than a biblical worldwide flood. So we describe a universal flood. And there were several reasons. In fact, I gave seven of them, but some of the main ones, for example, the existence of the ark itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably took somewhere in the range of 70, 80 years to construct. And why build such a massive structure if the flood was local, for example?
Right. Do we know if anyone besides Noah and his family worked on the biblical account? Does it?
The text doesn't mention anyone, okay. But I don't have a problem with subcontractors, maybe, that Noah may have used.
Yeah, either people who didn't believe or people who believed in
people that wanted to make money.
Yeah, or people, you know, yeah. You just wonder if.
Still.
Probably not that important.
We've also mentioned the Ark encounter, Ken Ham's reproduction using the dimensions that are given in the Bible.
Yeah, I still haven't gotten out there.
Well, just seeing it, it just impresses you with the massiveness and what it had would have taken.
Is it surreal when you see
it? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what I was impressed with is the interior.
Right.
The interior is so spacious.
Could have had a football game in there.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's amazing. But anyway, the actual and real ark not only would have taken a lot of effort, but God shows an example that if he wants to do a localized judgment, i.e. Sodom and Gomorrah,
mm-hmm.
he just instructs the believers there to leave. And that's not the case with the Genesis flood. So that was one of the arguments that we talked about. We also talked about the universal destruction that is described and the various words and terms and phrases.
All
the Hebrew word kol. I gave you a little Hebrew lesson last time. It occurs 38 times in the narrative, and it describes just a variety, you know, all mankind, all animals, all beasts of the field, all the earth, all the mountains covered, and the word coal 38 times over and over and over. So to have a local flood, you have to explain away all 38
right
in that broader context.
That, you know, just knowing man and how often, even in the New Testament, you know, how many times you see Paul say, as I said before, and he repeats stuff,
right.
You know, God seems to know that we're, you know, I don't know how else to say it, and don't take offense, dumb sheep, including me, who need to hear things more than once.
Absolutely.
And in that narrative in Genesis, all.
Yep. Yep.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes.
It was all complete.
But not only that, the all combined with all of the various aspects.
Yeah.
And not just animals and man, but all the earth, all the mountains were covered, and all successive generations affected by the flood, things like that.
Yeah.
So the language is clearly universal, and you have to jump through hoops to get around it.
Yeah, and that's actually what I was saying earlier. Yeah, you really have to try hard to contradict, you know, what the Bible clearly shows.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And another powerful argument that we used. In the chapter immediately following the flood, God enters into a covenant mm-hmm. with Noah. But not only Noah, but it includes all of his descendants. And in fact, there's phraseology that indicates that covenant pertains to the entire earth. So it's not just with people. And biblically, a covenant is identical in our culture to a contract.
Right.
So it's legally binding. Now, God doesn't have to do that, but he does that so Noah has quadruple assurance that he's not going to bring another flood. So he is controlling the natural realm such that all of the factors that brought the flood initially will not be there or be present in the future. And God binds himself in a contract, or a berit is the Hebrew word there. And that's an argument for a universal flood, not only because of the description, but there have been several, in fact, many throughout history, floods of a local nature.
Right.
So every local flood would have meant that God went back on his word if the Genesis flood was a local flood. So that's an argument in favor of the universal aspect or the worldwide aspect of the flood. So those are some of the things that we talked about. And so the Bible insists that if we take it in its normal grammatical, historical, contextual understanding of the text, the only conclusion you can come to is the Genesis flood was worldwide. So the issue is, does science support that? And is there any evidence whatsoever? Or is the historical geologist correct in claiming that there is no evidence in the geological column? So that's what we want to look at in our session today, or at least begin.
Right.
Because I've mentioned that there's overwhelming. In fact, we could spend three sessions just on the scientific evidence. There's so much of it. And there's enough that I think would fill 3 hours worth.
Well, and as a reminder, you know, I think sometimes, and I was in this place at a time where I would have tuned in and heard this discussion and, okay, yeah, it's relevant. It's, you know, it's about things in the Bible. But why, you know, why is this so important to understand why we, you know, what we read in the Bible is true.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those who might kind of mix what the Bible says with secular scientific
thinking.
Yeah. and you know, it had such an impact. I mean, someone said this to me one time when I was in that place, and it had a big impact. I go, wow, you're right. Mm-hmm. Because if what is recorded in Genesis cannot be believed, then the rest
absolutely
of the word
absolutely
means nothing.
That's right. That's right.
So
it and in is, fact, in our culture, there is a battle for truth, and it's in virtually every area. Politics. What's reality? Is global warming really real? You know, these issues. What is the truth?
Right.
And certainly in the spiritual and theological area, there's a battle for the truth. Churches divide over their understanding. So the main reason that this is important is we want to seek truth, and we want to look at evidence. We want to see what not only the Bible says, but the things that support the biblical worldview. And this is one of those major areas where evidence speaks very loudly.
And so important to realize the enemy right from the beginning
is a deceiver.
Yeah, and wants to just make it where everything that God has to say isn't what we are clinging to.
Yes, yes.
You know, he says things like, did God really say?
Right.
You know, so.
And really the whole purpose of me coming, at least the view that I have in terms of the reason I come, I want to give people confidence
yeah.
that when the Bible speaks,
yeah.
it's the word of God.
And you know what? I'm glad you said that, Ray, because what was going through my head was that we would embrace the truth.
Absolutely.
And the idea isn't to create animosity in conversations.
No. Or conflict.
Right. It's to lovingly share the truth, to gently share the truth. And I think we've mentioned this before too, and I forget the Greek word for where we see gentle often in the Bible, mm-hmm. where it refers to a doctor setting a bone. It smarts a little bit when you get corrected.
Yep.
Like when a bone gets corrected, it smarts, mm-hmm. But it's healing.
Yeah.
And it's loving and it's, yeah. So that's where we're headed. I'm really looking forward to diving into this. Actually, Ray, believe it or not, it's already time for our first break. We'll take a break and then we'll come back and dive into it. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. Stay with us more with Ray Mondragon on ABQ Connect right after this.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
All right, welcome back into ABQ Connect. I'm Steve Ryman, and we're right in the middle of a conversation with Ray Mondragon. In just a minute, we're going to cover science evidence for a worldwide flood. But before we jump into that, I do want to remind you that Easter sunrise service is just around the corner. And, you know, we're going to turn around and it's going to be here at University Stadium this year with music from Calvary Worship Team with guest Stars Go Dim and Garrett Hornbuckle. Of course, a message from Skip Heitzig themed The Heist. Looking forward to hearing more from Skip on that. Translations provided that morning include translations for Spanish and for the deaf. It'll be live on YouTube and Facebook. And there will be additional Easter services at all Calvary campuses that day. No services Wednesday, April 5th or Saturday, April 8th. Either of those evenings will have services in preparation for Easter services. Good Friday services at Calvary Church, specifically the Osuna campus. There'll be a noon service in the amphitheater. And for that, you can actually register to donate blood at the blood drive. The Big Red Building, remember, down on University? They're going to be out here with their mobile blood drive unit on Good Friday, and you can register for that. But there will be a 6:30 service. The first time I can remember a Good Friday evening service at Calvary Church, 6:30 in the sanctuary. Details about all that weekend's things going on, you can go to calvarynm.church, including information about the other campuses. calvarynm.church. And earlier in today's show, I mentioned our guest Ray Mondragon is fresh back from out of town, and as is our engineer, who I greatly, Jared, I want to let you know, brother, how much I missed you when you were gone.
I missed you too. It's good to be back. I
fumbled through shows without an engineer and just realized how spoiled I am, and I appreciate all you do to get us on the air and make us sound good. I don't want to put you on the spot. Is there anything about the trip you want to share, some highlights?
Yeah, it was a great trip. We went to Los Angeles, my family and I. And we just did a number of different things. We went to Malibu, which is a beach that I had never been to before. Yeah, and so it's
lots
a
of big homes.
Beach.
Actually, lots of big homes, but lots of million-dollar small homes.
Yeah.
As well.
Yes. It's very jagged and cliffy beach, which is kind of cool because in California, that's a little more rare. So there was a lot of rocks.
Yeah.
And there was seashells. So we kind of gathered some of those. And then we went to the Wax Museum and the Guinness World Record Museum.
Oh, okay.
On the Walk of
Now, is that a Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, or is that only in England? I don't know if they've got one.
I don't believe. I think it's a separate.
Did they look real?
Museum. Some of them were really accurate. Yeah. 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 There were varying degrees of accuracy, but yeah. it was really cool.
We'll have to go online after the show. And I was going to say you have to show me pictures, but unless you and your family are in the pictures, then we can just go online and look at that.
Yeah.
Did you visit any church things that were kind of cool?
We ended up going to Greg Laurie's church.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
All right. We did.
So, and his son preached that weekend, and it was really good.
All right. Well, I'm glad you made it home safe, and I'm glad you had time with your family, and I'm glad you're back in studio to engineer for us because you do such a great job.
I'm glad to be back. Thank you.
All right. Let's get back into our conversation with Ray Mondragon, and we're looking at science evidence, Ray, for worldwide flood. But did you have something before that you wanted to cover?
Well, I just want to give a little background.
Okay.
In terms of some of the science. Obviously, in creation science, we're, like we mentioned at the end of the last segment, we're seeking truth. So it's not that we have it all at once. So we continue to do research. In other words, there's people that do lots of research on an ongoing basis. So sometimes we come up with some theories and modify them and try to make sure that whatever we look at, we start with a biblical worldview and then see what the science says. So what I'm going to share is a little bit of a recent science endeavor, you might say, within the community, the creation science community, by a world-class scientist, and particularly one that actually was one of the founders of our local group here, and he spent most of his career at Los Alamos National Laboratories. And at the lab, he developed what is now known as the Baumgartner flood model. John Baumgartner is his name. He's retired, but he did a lot of research. And his expertise is geophysics. Now, before he brought this model, which fits the scriptures, and there's actual real evidence for it, most creationists thought, well, how do you get so much rain, and how do you get so much water, and where does it come from? And at one time there was a canopy theory, and I think it still exists in some circles, particularly those that are not aware of the Baumgartner model. And the idea that there was a canopy of water, and it was based a little bit on that Genesis 2 passage that we looked at several months ago as well. But I mentioned that that water that's described there is probably at the edge of the universe, not the atmosphere. But the old theory was the water came from a collapse of this canopy and brought 40 days and 40 nights of water. Because most climatologists, in fact, we would agree with that the atmosphere is incapable of holding as much water as is described in the Genesis account, enough water for 40 days and 40 nights. So you have to have a source, in other words, a continuous source of water.
Right.
And the Baumgartner model not only provides that, but provides a lot of other evidence. So a little bit of the background of Baumgartner, he recognized that there does exist in the Atlantic Ocean at the bottom, the floor, there's actually what we could consider a mountain range. It's called the Mid-Atlantic Range. Now, before World War II, this was unknown. I mean, you just have the Atlantic Ocean. You think maybe the ocean bottom is flat or whatever.
Right.
But with the coming of submarines and other ability to detect underwater phenomenon like mountain ranges and that sort of thing, this mid-Atlantic range was discovered. And the interesting thing, Baumgartner, being a geophysicist, began to put together thinking, well, what would form such a mountain range and how could this come about? And could this be related to the Genesis flood? And his expertise in geophysics would be plate tectonics.
Right. And I look out at the sand. I was thinking that. I look out at the Sandias or the Sierra Nevadas, which are both considered block mountain ranges.
Yeah.
And there were two plates collide. And
yes.
And if you push them together hard enough, one gives
and
goes up over the other.
Right.
Which is, you know, when we look from, especially from this side of the Sandias, you want to see a portion of a plate of the earth. Look to the east.
That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, you have the boundary between, if you just look out your window here in Albuquerque and see the Sandia Mountains, the crest is actually one of the layers that was laid down by the Genesis flood. And below that, the granite and the jaggedness, the boundary there is called the Great Unconformity, and it exists all over the world. That is the boundary between the Genesis, what the Genesis flood ripped up. So that would be pre-flood rock. And then as the waters displaced material and then redeposited, they would be redeposited in layers. And the crest is one of those layers. But anyway, back to the background.
And it's the same under the water.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the background. So Baumgartner thought, well, what about these plates in the Atlantic Ocean? And if you evaluate it, and most geophysicists would agree that there's evidence that the plates moved apart, and they moved apart at a very rapid rate, such that what we have in that mid-Atlantic range or ridge is actually material that replaced other material as a result of rapid movement of these tectonic plates. Now, for those that are not familiar with plate tectonics, a plate is of the size of a continent in some cases, some even larger. And the crust of the earth is composed of something, you might use an analogy of a puzzle board. And each of these plates float on molten lava, you might say, or molten material. That's the mantle. And since they're floating, there is some movement. Now, in our time, the movement is fractions of an inch. And when you have movement of two plates against one another, like the San Andreas fault there.
Like what we saw in Turkey.
Or elsewhere.
Month. Yeah.
Yeah. You have earthquakes.
Yeah.
And great shaking. But there's evidence that some of this phenomenon took place at a very rapid rate during Genesis flood. In fact, this is the cause of the flood.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Genesis account describes Genesis 7,
is there any pushing against that? That would have had been very rapid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, Baumgartner calls it a continental sprint rather than continental drift.
Which I would have to assume that what was witnessed at Mount St. Helens would put to rest some of that. You think things can't happen as quickly as you think by your secular science. But the truth is, it can, and we have evidence from things like Mount St. Helens.
That's some of the evidence that we'll talk about later on, not today.
Yeah. So
Baumgartner's flood model basically describes the movement. And by the way, he models this. He's got a flood model that took the world's largest computer at Los Alamos at the time, took all of the capability of it, and he had to run the model at like 2 a.m. in order to.
What year that was? Or near or close?
80s, I think.
Okay, so
that, 80s, that, 90s.
That power is in our phones now.
Yeah. But anyway, it took all the capability of Los Alamos National Lab computers to run that flood model. And in the flood model, it's a finite element model, but the model basically indicates the possibility of rapid movement and what geologists call subduction of entire continents. And in the flood model, he proposes that the pre-flood ocean floor, all of that subducted into the mantle. And when you have a displacement like that, it's replaced by material that has to come from the mantle.
So clearly with that kind of activity, things, earthquakes or what have you.
Massive destruction.
Yeah. Do they have any idea what that would equate to on today's Richter scale?
No.
Okay. Yeah, off the charts, probably.
Off the charts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when the text describes something and Baumgartner's model basically describes this. It says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month on the seventh day of the month, this is Genesis 7:11.
It's an actual date.
Yes.
We've talked about
too. About that, the historicity of the flood. Yeah. To the day.
Right.
To the day. Emphasizes it. On the same day, the first thing that it describes, all the fountains of the great deep burst open. And then it describes, and the floodgates of the sky were opened. And then we have the description of the rain falling on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Very simple, very brief. And in the Baumgartner model, he models the movement, the separating of tectonic plates that present day form North and South America, Africa, and Europe at one time. And many secular geologists describe this as Pangaea.
One landmass.
Yeah, one landmass. And that separation produced the continents that we live today.
Yeah, imagine the energy that took.
But in the what caused the separation also, or as a result of the separation, you have to have a replacement of the landmass. And these fountains are actually as a result of hot lava or hot mantle material coming in contact with the ocean floor, or the ocean bottom, rather. And that'll produce an explosive expansion and evaporation, and jets of water that would shoot through the ocean from the bottom of the ocean to the top into the atmosphere, producing thick clouding all over the earth.
Does heat rise underwater? Is that part of what, I mean?
Well, it's just the explosiveness of the evaporation.
I mean, I have to imagine once it touches it, it's at a boil.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it shoots it up. In other words, it just blasts it up into the atmosphere. And that produces a continuous flow of evaporated water, ocean water, in the atmosphere, supersaturating the atmosphere, producing 40 days and 40
minutes. I don't know if we'll even care when we get home to heaven. But, you know, I wonder if God can do whatever he wants. It'd be great to be able to see that.
Yeah.
However he might be able to show us.
Oh, I'm sure he can show it.
Yeah. earlier in the show, we were talking about the model of Noah's Ark in, I think it's in Kentucky.
Yes.
And how surreal that is to see. Could you imagine? I can't begin to imagine.
No, we can't imagine what took place.
Yeah.
Now, part of the flood model, as you have these movements of these tectonic plates, we know, for example, what caused that tsunami in Japan a few years ago that wiped out the coast and the nuclear power plants there. That was tiny.
Right. Compared
to this.
Yeah.
So you will also have these tsunami waves that would overtake all of the continents or the landmass, I should say.
Something much closer to what you'd see in a CG apocalyptic movie, only not even that it would dwarf that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So these tsunamis would rip up everything on the surface of the landmass, including entire forests. Everything has passed, overshadow everything, destroying everything. And then as these waters slow down, then you have a redepositing of all that material in all of the layers. So we would view the entire geological column, and at the Grand Canyon, you can see all of the layers down to that great unconformity that I talked about earlier. And below, it's a mile deep.
Which, by the way, since you mentioned the Grand Canyon, I know there's, I don't know if it's at the top or at the bottom, a bookstore that actually began to carry a book from one of the creation scientists that shared the information they found in the Grand Canyon.
Well, that's good.
It was very encouraging to you. That was several years ago. Hopefully that's still something that's available to the visitors there.
So that's a brief, I hope I simplified it a little bit in terms of a description.
Yeah, kind of hard to, you did great, Ray. Kind of hard to simplify what God did when he created what caused, what many, well, we hope many that some believe,
right,
the would describe what the great flood was like.
Yeah,
if so, you were there to see it.
So Baumgartner's model, and Baumgartner himself stresses that the Genesis flood was more a tectonic cataclysm than it was a climatological one. Now, okay, there was a combination of the two, but it was a tectonic, and the results of the tsunamis that produced all the after effects of the Genesis flood.
Now, just so you know where we are, we're going to press on. We're going to skip a break here and press on.
Okay.
I believe we are going to catch up with the Lamars at the end of today's show in our final segment. But you know, we got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So we can go as far into this or cover more deeply what we're in and pick up, obviously, where, you know, next month.
Okay. That's
good. But let's press on.
Well, that's a description of what took place, at least what the evidence today seems to indicate. In other words, this is geophysics.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, many in the geophysical community,
secular, okay,
are recognizing the significance of Baumgartner's work. They're not turning to Christ necessarily. They're not believing in the Bible necessarily. But Baumgartner has not received much pushback.
Negative criticism.
Yeah, because his work has been very good.
Well, you said it earlier. You start with the biblical account.
Right.
If you start with the truth.
And that's what Baumgartner does.
Right. Which, and I think we've even mentioned it when you and I have visited, similar to what I've heard Stephen Collins do, mm-hmm, with the archaeology he's doing in Jordan at Tell al-Hammam in the dig for,
yes,
mm-hmm, for Sodom. You know, he went to the scripture. And started there, and,
right,
and that's what led him to where they would dig. Imagine that. And the same with this. Imagine that.
And
start with the truth.
I would encourage anyone that's scientifically inclined to look for evidence or things in the scriptures that describe the natural realm in relation to whether it be biology or geology or geophysics. You'll find that there's a lot of information in the scriptures that set the parameters for any research,
right,
that you would do. And that's what John Baumgartner, Russ Humphreys, and many in the creation movement, this is what they do. They start with the biblical worldview and then do their research. But anyway, since we're about done here, the flood model tells us that something very cataclysmic took place, as described, and it would produce all of the phenomena that we have. And what you can observe today, what is called the geological column, this is secular science. We don't dispute that column in terms of its existence and the layers that you can find. We just would reinterpret it and say that all those layers were laid down in a relatively short period of time. And we have a chronology in the book of Genesis. We have 377 days that are specified very carefully. I read that, uh-huh, 7:11 that tells about the first day or the beginning of the cataclysm. Mm-hmm. We have an end date, and we have dates in between 377 days of.
It's not just a story,
flood.
It's history.
It's,
yeah,
historical account. And in that, all these layers of the geological column down to the Great Unconformity, and that's a name that secular geologists have come up with, all of those are sedimentary rock layers. In other words, they were laid down more than likely by water. So we interpret everything from the Great Unconformity to the surface as laid down by the Genesis flood in that relatively short period of time. And the surface, there's lots of evidence on the surface of rapidly receding waters of the flood that would have shaped much of what you could observe today, no matter where you go all over the world.
Well, listen, we are out of time. And when we come back together, we'll kind of rehash a little bit of what
we
covered.
We'll review it.
But then press on and looking at more evidence for the flood.
And there's overwhelming evidence.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. but Ray Mondragon has been our guest. He's with Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico, and we mentioned it earlier in the show. Tuesday night, right? Next Tuesday night, the third Tuesday of each month, meeting at Faith Bible Church on Central and Moon at 7 p.m. You're invited. It's no cost. And Ray, for those who haven't attended, what typically happens each month?
Well, we usually have a speaker that deals with some area of science and relates it to scripture, basically, usually from a biblical
If someone's having dialogue with someone and trying to share the truth with them, and that person is open to coming to an event like that, is that a great place to bring someone who has questions?
Absolutely.
Or, quite honestly, someone who would want to prove their point?
We always have a Q&A afterwards,
yeah,
too.
Okay.
And there's always people that'll hang around and discuss issues for right. anyone that wants
so
to.
So that's Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico next Tuesday night at Faith Bible Church, Moon and Central. And then this conversation will be archived at abqconnect.online. And Ray, you archive it as well.
Yes, I put it on my website, forhisglorynm.com. And that's forhisglorynm.com.
All right, let's do this next month, okay?
Let's do it.
Thanks, Ray.